All right. So let me get this going here. So John 21, in this conversation on liminal spaces, you might remember this conversation began for us back on Easter morning. We were in Mark 16 in this series on the Gospel of Mark, and Mark 16 is the final chapter. It's perfect. It lined up with, of course, Easter morning. And we ended up talking about the liminal space between the crucifixion and the resurrection, and how especially these three women, Mary, Salome, and Mary, lived in this in-between, and kind of what happened to them, and maybe what changed in them because of being in that Holy Saturday, that liminal space. But, you know, that isn't the only liminal space that you find there in that period of time. If you look ahead into the book of Acts, you find a number of liminal spaces. Like after the resurrection and before the ascension. The ascension is when Jesus in bodily form leaves planet Earth. And there's 40 days between those two things, which should prick our ears, as we've seen with the people of Israel and with Moses. And we know there are other places where 40 days or 40 years, the number 40 is it's a clue. It's a little alert to us saying, hey, this might be a liminal space. And then we know that there is this liminal space which follows the ascension between Jesus leaving and Pentecost, Pentecost being the coming of God's Spirit to God's people. And just so you know, ascension, the day that that's remembered and celebrated, just happened. So we're already 40 days post-Easter. Ascension Day was May 21. Pentecost is coming up next Sunday. So we right now are in this in-between time between ascension and Pentecost. Right? And Pentecost is what set the church out on its beginning as people began to gather together following this way of Jesus. So that's an in-between time. And then, let's see if I can get my mouse to work here. Good, all right. In between Pentecost, and you could pick any number of moments after that, but one might be the destruction of the temple, the end of Judaism as it was, which you got to remember, first Christians are Jewish, of course. What a pivotal moment for them, about roughly 40 years. And that sets off this whole new kind of chapter, a whole new reality of how to worship and where to worship. And so you see a number of liminal spaces in the book of Acts. There might even be others that I didn't think about. But here's what I want to summarize is in mentioning those and then in thinking back to how we looked at the people of Israel and Moses' life. You know, liminal spaces can begin when loss and crisis come or when unimaginable joy comes. I think we might imagine or think that liminal space is only brought on by difficulty, and often it is. But it also can be brought on by something that's really wonderful, like Pentecost was. Liminal spaces vary in their length of time. That's probably maybe obvious, but I think it still bears saying. Days to decades. And the thing is, we don't often get to choose how long they are. But they do vary in length, and they do come to an end. And maybe that's a little bit of hope for us today, as we're in this liminal space that feels like it might never end. It will. It will. What I want to really focus on today is the way in which liminal spaces are times of transformation and preparation. Times of transformation and preparation. It's helpful for me to think about this in terms of these three words here. Order, disorder, reorder. This is not mine. I didn't make this up. I heard this first from Richard Rohr. Maybe there are other people from whom he got it. But order is what was, right? And we know all about order. March 1, we knew school, work, grocery shopping, everything. We had a way of being. It was ordered. It was structured. We knew it. We knew it well. And there's reorder, what will be, what is not yet, but it will come. A new reality, a reordered reality. By the way, it's not going to look like the past order. I think we need to be honest about that. It never is. It's a reordering. But in the middle is this doggone disorder, right? This liminal space where things are disrupted and where we feel disoriented, right? It's a time of disorder. And that we feel that collectively, certainly, during this time. But this also applies to us as individuals. Order is who you were. Reorder is who you will be. And in the middle is this liminal space. Which means that liminal space is space where transformation and preparation happen. Okay? In liminal spaces, we're transformed and we're prepared for the future that is to come. That is, if we remain open, that's the key, you know, like Moses. And to some extent, the people of Israel, although we saw some of their resistance as well, but if we remain open like Moses or like Jacob, and we wrestle and we don't let go, right, like we talked about last week, or as we'll see today with a guy named Peter. If we remain open, liminal spaces can be spaces of remarkable transformation. We learn things about ourselves and about the world and about God that we will need in order to move forward into the future that God is calling us into. And if you look back on your liminal spaces, I bet you would say that they were transformative. You know, when I think back to being 17, that was a year, 17 to 18 was a year when my father died and I graduated from high school and went to college. And those are two really big moments, two really like seismic events that thrust me into an in-between time, a liminal space. And when I look back on that time, I learned a great deal. Sometimes with some resistance, maybe a lot of resistance. Sometimes I learned things the hard way. Like I learned a lot about blame. I was very angry in that time, and perhaps understandably so. But I learned a lot about blame because I was blaming a lot of people and a lot of things that were in my life on who I was becoming and on the actions that I was taking. And I learned, and it took some time, to learn this, that blame is very dangerous and it can lead you down a road pretty quickly that is destructive. And that's just one of the many things that I think I learned in that space. And I bet you can look back on times of in between and see that you were changed by them as well. Well, in Acts, we find this 40-day period between the resurrection and the ascension. And it's not only in Acts, we find a story about it in John 21. That's where we'll be today, Luke 24, Matthew 28. We have this, this liminal space. And in Acts, one of the things that we notice when we read that first chapter is that the disciples encounter Christ in this liminal space. And they're changed because of it. Jesus meets with them in that 40-day period on multiple occasions. Something happens to them. They're changed, they're prepared, so that they are able to begin to lead this thing that wasn't really called at the time, the church, this way of being, this movement that was forming. When you look back on Acts 1, and you've got to read carefully, but it's there. The disciples are being changed and transformed as they meet with Christ, and it's in preparation for what is to come. So the question I want to ask is, what if God used that liminal space that the disciples were in? What if God might use this liminal space that you and I are in to change you and to prepare you for the future that is to come? What if that might be true? If it is, then there might be quite a bit of hope, actually, in this time of disruption and disorientation. What if God used this liminal space to change you and prepare you for the future that's coming? So let's look at John 21. I'm going to be reading from the New Living Translation. And I'd love to read the whole chapter, but we've got time for these verses, verses 4 to 6 and 12 to 19. So this is, again, remember, after the resurrection, right? Jesus has appeared a couple of times to his disciples, but it's not like he's been with them constantly. Days are going by, and they are not seeing him, meeting him. And so the disciples go back to what they know. They are in the in-between, disorientation, disruption. So they go back to what they know, which for many of them was fishing. And so they're out on the boat, and they're having no luck at all. And suddenly there's a person standing on the beach. Verse 4, at dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, "Fellows, have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. Then he said, "Throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some." So they did. And they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. And then they realized that it's Jesus. The light bulb goes off, because you might remember the first time that many of them encountered Jesus, this exact same thing happened. They were out fishing, catching nothing all night long. Jesus says, "Throw your nets on that side." They rein in this haul of fish. So the light goes off. Oh my gosh. The guy standing on the beach is Jesus. Verse 12. "Now come and have some breakfast," Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153, which is quite a specific number, large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. "Now come and have some breakfast." Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," Peter replied. "You know I love you." "Then feed my lambs," Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord," Peter said. "You know I love you." "Then take care of my sheep," Jesus said. A third time he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go." Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, "Follow me." All right, so I want to engage together this morning around the text. And I want to give you a couple questions here. And I want you to just keep your Bible open. You're going to have to go back to these verses and think about these questions for a moment. What do the disciples and Peter specifically experience in this story? What happens to them? And then, how might those things have transformed and prepared them for what was to come? Okay. So if you're with some people right now, you can have a conversation. If you don't have folks nearby, just give this some reflection. Go back through these verses. By the way, I'm not looking for anything that's like hidden in the text. It's there. There are things happening to the disciples. very kind of plain, some of them very ordinary sorts of things in a way. How might those things have shaped and prepared them? I'm going to give you a couple minutes. And then if you would, I'd love to see your thoughts in the chat window. What do you think? What are you seeing? What are you noticing? I'm going to give you, again, about a minute or two here to just reflect and see what you think. Have a conversation. If you've got kids in the room, engage them. Maybe read the story again. What do you notice? What's happening to them? How might it have shaped them? All right, we'll take just a couple more seconds here. Some things are starting to come into that chat window. Appreciate it. And again, you know, this is just us kind of having a conversation as best we can in this format about what we notice in the text here. So someone said that they've experienced surprise while doing the ordinary things of life. That's great. So they're in the mundane for, again, some of them especially. Nothing more common than fishing. And it's there that they're surprised by grace, by the presence of Christ. Yeah, it's good. When they don't have direction, they go back to what they know. That's awesome. Yep, Melissa, I think that's a good insight. We all do that. And there's no real condemnation in this story about that. They don't get in trouble for that at all. In fact, it's where Jesus meets them. Isn't that interesting? Peter's friends don't let him go fishing alone, even though he was planning to go out alone. That's great. We didn't read that part of the story, but that's really good. So there's this companionship that's happening. They're in it together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're learning how to recognize the voice of Jesus. That's certainly part of this story, right? They don't see that it's him. They don't recognize that it's him, even when they hear his voice right away. That's good. Frustration, yeah. No fish, no Jesus to renew the sense of direction. I think that's awesome. I think that's definitely happening. There's a shift taking place in them. They needed to make a change to see growth. Yeah, absolutely. Which is, again, instructive for us probably in this time. Peter experiences both shame and forgiveness. Yeah, there's something happening in those three questions that Jesus asked him. Mm-hmm. And they're getting their new mission. Yeah, that's a big part of what's going on in this 40-day period between resurrection and ascension. We see it here in this story, and we see it in the book of Acts in chapter 1 as well. These are awesome, everybody. This is fantastic. Yep. Feel free. Like, keep typing them in. I'm going to offer a couple of things here, and then maybe that will, you know, stir something else in you to add to this chat window. So these are so good. I had a few. Some of them will be very close to what some of you have mentioned. And then you saw things I didn't see, and I sat with this thing all week. So kudos to you. Someone really mentioned this, I think, essentially, right? There's a large haul of fish in verse 6. I think it's this yet again reminder that power and life flows from Christ. At his word, by being obedient to his command, there is power and life accessible, right? So that's one thing I noticed. Another, in verse 12, is that Jesus served them. This just struck me. You know, they've got all the fish. They could have made the breakfast. They're the disciples, but Jesus has made breakfast and he serves them. I think, again, Jesus is demonstrating a life and leadership that's rooted in selflessness. And if we know what's coming for the disciples, and we do, they don't, but we know that they are going to need to lead here very soon. And Jesus is showing them the way to lead. Three times Peter's asked, some of you were getting at this one, and I see one more comment here. Yeah, Peter, this one connects from the Grushkas. You know, Peter's on the outs, like avoiding your boss when you know you messed something important up, yep. To being restored and given additional responsibility. Absolutely. This is only the third time that they've seen Jesus. We know of at least the first time was what appears to be fairly brief. This seems to be the first time that Peter and Jesus have had some time alone. And the last time that Peter was engaged with Jesus, was with him or near him, Peter what? Right? He denies him three times. First abandons him, runs away, then denies him. And so this perhaps in Jesus asking him three times, do you love me, is an act of restoration. I think that's good, Grushkas. I would agree. There's healing going on here, I think. There's mission going on, added responsibility. Yep. And then you just have this ending, you know, where we stopped reading in verse 19. They are Jesus' final words to Peter, as far as we know here. I think this is just a reorientation, right? Hey, not that direction, this direction. I mean, to have those be the last words to Peter, follow me. I think there's something to that, perhaps. So the point I want to kind of try and raise here, and you're already seeing it, and you're already naming it, is that in this space, in this liminal space that the disciples are in, there is change happening to them. We can't measure it necessarily as if human change is ever easy to measure. You know, there's no metrics in this passage. But this experience, this encounter with Christ is transformative. It's restorative. It sets them on a trajectory. It's important. And it prepares them for what is to come, even though they have no idea what is to come. And we know this because if you read Acts 1, the question that they're asking Jesus in Acts 1, hey, when are you going to like bring your earthly kingdom and like finally take care of this whole Rome thing and set us up as, you know, the power to be reckoned with? They're still thinking that the resurrected Christ has come to do something like that. And so they don't know what's to come, just like you and I don't know what is to come. We don't know what the reorder is going to bring or look like. But could it be that in this space and time, there is an opportunity for us to be changed, and not just changed arbitrarily, but changed in such a way that we would then be ready to live in this new future that is coming. So that's John 21 from the word standpoint, from reading the text, and you can see there is a lot to glean, and we haven't, of course, even covered it all. I want to, though, with the remainder of our time here, I want to invite you into a practice that Christians have been doing for centuries when they read the Bible. It's a practice that sometimes gets called Ignatian contemplation. So I only say that because that may ring some bells for some of you, but you don't have to worry about calling it that. It's simply a way of reading the Bible in which we live into the story. So what we've done is we've read it, and maybe we've gone into the story a little bit, kind of imagining ourselves in it. But this way of reading is fully imaginative. It is using God's gift of your imagination to be in the story, to put yourself into it. And so we're going to take, you know, 5 or 6 minutes here to enter into the story in that way. And what I would invite you to do is to just get comfy, find a position that's comfortable, but yet that you can be attentive. And it might be helpful for you to close your eyes. If we're trying to engage our imaginations and put ourselves into the story, imagine that we are there, that we are Peter, that we are the disciples. We may need to close our eyes so that the distractions are less. Or as Sarah Jane often says when she's leading us, find a soft gaze, right? Find a soft gaze if that would be better for you. Kids, maybe like even fairly young kids, and certainly students, like middle and high school students, you can do this, what we're about to do right now. This takes no special training or degree, all right? So what I'm going to do is just lead us through a time of putting ourselves into the story. So find that comfy spot. Find that comfy spot. And again, if helpful, close your eyes or find that soft gaze. And I want you to imagine that you are out in that boat, out on the lake, the Sea of Galilee. I wonder, what do you see? What do you smell? Is there water between your toes at the bottom of the boat? Who's on the boat with you? Can you feel the sun? Can you smell the salt? And then all of a sudden a voice from the shore rings out across the water. Can you hear that voice? What is it saying? It's told you to put your net on the other side. So you're doing that now. You're moving the net over. Again, everyone hauling this massive net, struggling, stripping wet to the other side of the boat. And now you're pulling it in, except you can't, right? Can you feel the light bulb go off? That this person on the shore is someone you know. Someone you're desperate to see. And so you row back as fast as you can. Maybe you jump out of the boat to run to shore. There you find a fire, breakfast waiting for you. Can you smell that? What does the beach feel like under your feet? What's the temperature that you imagine? And then can you see the risen Christ just feet away from you? How does that make you feel? Can you imagine that Christ is inviting you today to come and to eat, to sit with him. And then it's just you and the risen Christ. Breakfast is over. You've wandered down the beach a bit. I wonder what you're feeling if you're Peter. And I wonder what you're feeling if it's you, if you were there walking on the Sea of Galilee with Jesus himself, how would you feel in this moment? What would you want to say or ask? And then can you hear Jesus ask you a question? I don't know what that question might be. Maybe it's the same question that he asked Peter, do you love me? Maybe it's a different question, though. Maybe the question Jesus is asking you today is, what do you need? Or can you give me your heaviest burden? What can I provide to you? I mean, I don't know what question Christ might want to ask you today. What might it be? And then how would you respond? If Jesus asked you, is there a part of you that you desire to see changed? What would your response be? Again, if Jesus asked you, what do you need? What would you say? If he asked you about your heart's loyalty, what would you tell him? And then could you hear those final two words, follow me? Can you hear Jesus saying them to you? And what does that mean for you? What does it look like this week? Not 10 years down the road or next month, but in the coming days, what does it mean for you to follow Jesus? And you can let that question just kind of ring as we come out of that time. If you'd like to open your eyes, come back kind of into this space. That may be a very different way for you to experience the Bible, but again, it's a very old and quite trusted way. Not the only way, but it is a way to read the scriptures. And my hope for you this week is that you would let this story kind of resonate in you in the days ahead. And as it pops back into your memory, you would find yourself open and receptive and curious about what God might want to transform in you in this liminal space that we're in. And that if you have something that you need to ask God or say, or if you feel that God's asking you something, that you would again be open and receptive to that conversational this week.